You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On today's Underreported, we'll get an update on the catastrophic humanitarian crises in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And joining me now are Nicholas de Tarente, the executive director of Doctors Without Borders, and Bukeni Bekwaruzi from Ajedika, an organization he founded to demobilize child soldiers. I'm very pleased to welcome you both to the show. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Leonard.
Hello. Thank you.
Nicholas, the spring edition of the Doctors Without Borders newsletter devotes a great deal of space to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Excuse me. How do you decide? How do you decide which crises to focus on?
Are you okay?
I'll die. That is so weird.
I'll try talking then. Well, I think you're trying to ask me how we decide which crises to focus our attention to, and I think for the Congo, it's really quite in a way it's quite obvious just in terms of the scale and the magnitude of the ongoing disaster there. Of course, the Congo is in a process of transition, one that's been going on for a number of years now. Presidential elections are scheduled at the end of July, and so there is a process that's ongoing to lead sort of out of the conflict that's been going on for years. But when we look at it from our perspective, from the perspective of people on the ground who are trying to deliver medical care to those who are worst off, who are really in crisis, we see a very different reality where really the majority of the population still, in most areas of the country, still lives in extreme hardship with diverse situations. It's a huge country, so it's hard to generalize. There are areas of still active conflict, and maybe we can focus on those for a while. And then there are also just the overall situation of a collapsed public government, health system, which is having huge impact across the country, even in areas that are not affected by active violence.
Is the DRC experiencing the greatest number of serious crises in the world right now? Because we're not hearing a lot about it in the news.
Well, it is very much an underreported catastrophe and has been for many years. We put together a list every year to try to highlight attention and to bring attention to some of these places. And just to give an example, we do it like the top 10 most underreported stories every year in terms of humanitarian emergencies. And last year, out of 14,000 minutes of nightly broadcast news in the U.S., the Congo received 6 minutes of coverage, so very much at the bottom of the list. And I think there are many reasons for that. There's just lack of attention on international issues in general. This is a long-running conflict. It's hard to cover for logistical and security reasons. A big country. It's diverse. It's complex. You need to really spend some time to try to understand what's happening, to unpack it, to make it intelligible for people who are outside of that environment.
Bukeni, is it your sense that things have been getting worse in the DRC?
I agree with my friend from Dax. Things are really getting worse in the DRC, despite some favorable signs of progress, which means, many people usually think when, for example, a country is getting elections and if there is a kind of a positive signs about politics. But usually we do forget the huge and worse problem of humanitarian situation in a country like Congo, which in the most of time the programs of reconstruction are really focused on just political situation, but the socio-economic problems remains a very huge problem, such as in a country like DRC with a huge lack of infrastructures. people, there's a lack of education on health and prevention of different diseases like HIV, AIDS, and other preventable diseases. So this makes things to be really, really very complicated. And they just small organizations are some of them are working on this issue, but also they are confronted to the basic to the basic problems of infrastructure in a country of DRC, where we can't not say that all countries now going well, because we still have different parts who are still in insecurity situation.
Well,
things to be really very very worse.
Tell us about your organization, Ajedi Ka. What's its mission, and when did you found it?
Yeah, we found Ajedi Ka in 1998. The goal was to tackle this issue of child soldiers, means being involved in the disarmament, demobilization, and the reintegration of child soldiers. And then, before reintegration, we do accommodate children from the army. From the camp of the armed groups and renewed them with their family. And this kind of issue is almost not very easy to tackle, since we have to deal with malicious group who really are not willing to participate in the peace campaign.
But I have heard of child soldiers elsewhere, in Uganda, in Sierra Leone, but I didn't know that there was a child soldier problem in the Congo. Is this something that is regional, or are there child soldiers all over the country?
I must tell you that this problem is regional so far, because Congo has got a bad chance to accommodate different armed group from neighboring countries, such as armed group from Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda. And the Congo has a largest number of child soldiers in Africa. In the Congo, to 2004, the general number of child soldiers was up to 30,000 child soldiers, which were aged between 8 to 15 years old. You know, you see, as you may see, they are really very young, and they were actively invited to participate into armed combat in the DRC.
Then, Nicholas, does Doctors Without Soldiers treat many child soldiers?
I'm not aware of us treating child soldiers in particular as a, certainly we don't focus on them as a specific group, but I would agree with what Bukeni is saying. The conflict continues to center on the eastern part of the country, and in these. In the eastern part, in Ituri province, which borders neighboring Sudan and Uganda, and then in the Kivus, and then in Katanga, in all of these places, you have militia groups that were created and that recruited locally to a large extent, and they recruited child soldiers as well.
So
and
this is spillover from other conflicts mostly, or is this a Congolese problem as well? I know
I said
both. Doctors Without Soldiers before. I meant Doctors Without Borders.
It's both. I mean, the conflict in the Congo was an invasion of neighboring countries, and then they spawned rebel groups from within the Congo. The armies of neighboring Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi have officially withdrawn, but many of the armed groups remain. There's a process now of, and that's the whole political process of trying to reintegrate many of these groups into the national army, and that is an ongoing process. But I think the key thing to remember in terms of all of this is, even though you have a national army that has integrated some of these rebel groups, is that they're paid very little, if at all, and their main means of surviving and thriving as armed groups is to prey on the local population, which means, what does that mean? That means theft, looting, physical violence, rape, displacement, etc. And that is the reality that the population, the civilian population that's still in these areas affected by violence, in particularly in the east and in Katanga, continue to face on a daily basis.
Does Doctors Without Borders treat soldiers? Would that be seen as taking sides or condoning what they do?
No, not at all. I mean, the medical, the medical obligation is to treat anyone irrespective of status. We treat soldiers if they present and they're in need of medical care. That's a medical obligation to do so. They have to leave their weapons at the door.
Bukemi,
yeah.
Who's fighting in Congo and what are they fighting over?
I mean, right now there is still different militias who have not yet agreed to integrate their national army, which is called FRDC, and there is still the different rebel group from Rwanda and Uganda who are still operating in the Eastern DRC, and who caused different human rights violation against them, rape and killing and abduction and destruction of villages. But I want to mention here that the big issue and the big challenge of the DDR program as a post-conflict issue is that this program is not really able to tackle very well the consequences of the enlistment and the participation of children into the war in the DRC, especially the health and psychological issue as a key in the reintegration process of child soldier. For example, you found that, and I think the colleague from DAX will agree with me that this program is not able to tackle, for example, the HIV/AIDS issue.
We'll take a little break. We'll come back to HIV and displacement of thousands of people in the conflict in the Congo, which has been called Africa's World War, the greatest number of people since World War II. Who have been killed in any conflict have been killed in Congo. And my guests are Bukeni Bekwaruzi of Ajedika, an organization he founded to demobilize child soldiers. He's talking to us from Belgium. And in our studio, Nicholas de Toronte, the executive director of Doctors Without Borders. Stay with us. We're back with Nicholas de Toronte, the executive director of Doctors Without Borders, and Bukeni Bekwaruzi from Ajedika, an organization he founded to demobilize child soldiers, but also now has expanded its concerns into the whole matter of the impact of the spread of HIV/AIDS in Congo. Bukemi, how many people are infected in the DRC?
From some official statistics of UNAIDS, it says that over two million and a half are infected in the DRC.
2.5 million people. That's an incredible number.
Yeah, very, 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 very incredible number. And most of this infection was due to the war situation in the DRC. And in our experience, we have found that 20% of child soldiers are infected by HIV/AIDS, especially this is really very spread into girl soldiers.
Is it known how many of these infected people have access to antiretroviral treatments?
Exactly. In these 2 million people, and you found that less than 7,000 are having antiretroviral treatment. The problem is that this kind of treatment is really very expensive, and there is no infrastructure, even a center where people can get them. Usually, in some small cities, you will find this antiretroviral treatment, but many people don't have access to this kind of treatment.
Nicholas, is HIV/AIDS one of the major issues that Doctors Without Borders is focusing on the DRC?
Well, certainly it is. As Bukini says, one of the drivers of this has been the conflict itself, the violence, and sexually transmitted infections and sexual violence. I mean, it is worth mentioning the very high incidence of sexual violence perpetrated by armed men in the conflict areas. Just to give you an example, we have a hospital in Bunia in the Ituri province, which is one of the worst affected areas. And since June 2003, we treated 4,500 victims of sexual violence there. And looking at our statistics, 80% of the girls and women who present, and we of course don't capture all of them because it's hard to, our center is obviously hard to reach because of the security conditions, the road conditions, but 80% of them report having been raped by armed men. And 80% of them report having been raped by multiple assailants, by many men. And so that is, and this is just one small snapshot into that reality. So that is one of the drivers certainly of the epidemic. And as Bukini points out, of course, the response in terms of treatment and prevention programs is, vastly insufficient.
You can't preach protection to displaced women many cases have been raped.
Right, and treatment is absolutely our priority, and we have we're one of the few providers of antiretroviral therapy in Congo, but our efforts are small. We have one program in the eastern Congo, in the eastern part, in Bukavu. We have 500 patients under therapy there, and about 1,300 in Kinshasa. So out of the 7,000, we have a good share of the very few, fortunate few in the Congo who have who are receiving AIDS treatment. It's a huge problem. It's linked also to the infrastructure and the complete collapse of the health system as a whole. I mean, there's decades of repressive rule and lack of investment in public services under Mobutu, and then wars for the past decade basically have really devastated the health system, and there are very few facilities and health workers who are able to provide any kind of medical care, let alone HIV/AIDS care.
And when we're talking about 2.6 million people, that would be a very expensive treatment for HIV/AIDS.
Yes, I mean, the cost of, when you have 2.6 million people infected with HIV, does not mean that all 2.6 million actually need antiretroviral therapy. It's only patients who reach full-blown AIDS and advanced stage of disease who need to be put. But you need to follow them and treat them for opportunistic infections and so on. And then you need to treat a much higher number that are treated today with antiretrovirals. The cost has gone down for first-line therapy, but it still costs between the medicines and the care and the support, et cetera, and the healthcare workers and so on, it still costs about $1,000 per patient per year, which is completely out of reach of the budget of a country like Congo.
Bukini, is it?
And also this 2.6 million people, they just don't need just antiretroviral treatment, but also there is a need of food and psychological support, and also they are also victims. Besides, HIV AIDS positive, but also there's a problem of stigmatization. Since the DRC community is not really that does have a kind of tolerance against these people who are infected. So this makes things to be really very very complicated when this HIV AIDS positive can't have treatment, don't have enough there is no a kind of a structure who can accommodate them and give them a kind of and provide them kind of support. So things are really getting worse and worse for these people who are infected.
What about the government's role in all of this? Are they able to give any help?
It's difficult because you know there is no this kind of power of the government, since the priority of the government right now is not really social reconstruction, but all of the main focus is on elections, and also the government is just hoping that the international community will help the government just to organize the election. That is the problem of even people. They can't expect anything from the government, since it's not really in its priority.
Is there much of an international presence in the DRC right now? What about the UN? Are they maintaining peacekeeping forces there?
Yeah, they maintain UN peacekeeper there, but as you may know, last year, this mission peacekeepers, they were also involved in rape and other sexual exploitation, and they are also spread the different transmitted sexual disease, among them HIV/AIDS. But as I said, all the focus of the international community right now is on election, and while they are focusing on the election, people are getting spread. People are dying from HIV/AIDS and other preventable disease.
My guests are Bukeni Bekwaruzi from the organization Ajedi Ka, and Nicholas de Torrente, the executive director of Doctors Without Borders. You're listening to Underreported on the Leonard Lopate Show today here on WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Nicholas, Doctors Without Borders has said that Katanga province is home to perhaps the most forgotten crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The last time I heard of Katanga was when Moise Tshombe organized a breakaway state there when Congo first gained independence, and it was described as the richest part of the country.
Well, it is one of the richest parts of the country, but that's something that we see throughout the Congo, is that natural resource wealth, in particular in Katanga, it's diamonds, gold, and other minerals, is often linked to conflict and struggle over those resources, and therefore have with an impact on the civilian population. What's been going on in the Katanga is very interesting, because it's basically an area where there was the front line during most of the war, where Rwandan forces and Rwandan-backed forces had come to, and the government had tried to repel them, and in the process they actually armed militia groups, the so-called Mai Mai militia, and to fight the Rwandese forces. And then when the Rwandese withdrew, one of the processes that's happening now is that the government wants to reassert control, and therefore it's actually trying to engage in a pacification campaign and try to rein in these its former allies, these Mai Mai groups. And this process has been very brutal and violent. 100,000 people more have been displaced. Atrocities committed by the Mai Mai, by the Congolese army,
against their own people.
Against their own people. So this process of trying to create order, in fact, is creating a lot of damage for the people who are bearing the brunt of the violence. And it's basically because the armed groups again are not getting any logistical support, hardly any payment, etc. They really to wage their campaigns, they exercise a lot of violence against the population to get food, they rape for and so on, and that's the process that's been going on in Katanga. The on the assistance side, what was very striking to us is to see that there was hardly any aid going into this displaced population to help this displaced population, food aid, medical support, and so on.
NGOs are not going in there?
Well, there was very little earlier this year. This displacement took place late 2005, early 2006. Very little assistance, and part of that is because because there's a political process underway now with the elections that Bukeni talked about and a sense that the country is moving forward, there's a shift away from emergency assistance to more long-term reconstruction development aid. A sense that, we should not be responding to these kinds of emergencies. That's something of the past. And that the aid system, in fact, just was a little bit asleep at the wheel and did not want to really consider this as a pressing problem and respond to it in a timely fashion. So lack of food aid, high mortality rates that could have been prevented.
Bukeni, what impact has all of this had on the people there? Do they feel forgotten? Do they still have hopes or expectations of receiving any help?
The problem is that these people are really very disappointed, and they don't see where help will come from, will be coming from. And since there is no a kind of speaker who can just help these people to take their claims to different key decisions, they seem to be like abandoned, because there is this kind of for example security and the prioritization of which kind of emergency, and there is also their basic needs. So since they don't have to whom they will take this claim, since the key local authority, key national authorities seems to focus to other issue and other priorities, which is just the political priority. It is like they are really very, they are really feel to be abandoned, and really, please learn a lot, but people are really dying day by day.
I've heard that
disease, among them HIV/AIDS.
I've heard that some soldiers have, or many soldiers have, attacked civilians and taken any aid that they've received away from them.
The soldier, there is this national program of the mobilization and the reintegration. But soldier now, where they get help, nowhere. And also in this program, there is no any kind of issue on health. I think this is very serious, since it is concerning thousands and millions of people who are really in need of this kind of help.
Nicholas, is the DRC presenting the greatest challenge for Doctors Without Borders nowadays?
Well, it's always hard to rank countries and challenges.
Because there are so many crises.
Right, there are many crises, but it certainly is one of the countries where we have the largest program, where we have the most staff on the ground, we work in the most locations, and we're dealing with a very broad range of issues. And I think that's what really characterizes the Congo, the fact that you're dealing with very basic problems due to the collapsed health system, infectious diseases, vaccination coverage collapsed. And so we had to vaccinate, for instance, 600,000 children in a major city in Kasai earlier this year, just because the vaccination coverage is so low for a preventable disease like measles that you have to do an emergency campaign to try to vaccinate kids. So it goes from that to dealing with the consequences of violence in the East, HIV/AIDS care, and then there's a reemergence of because of the collapse of the health system and the lack of infrastructure, reemergence of rare diseases, underreported diseases or neglected diseases like sleeping sickness in an area close to the Sudan. So we have a program dealing with that as well. So there's a huge variety of needs linked to the very diverse but overall very poor situation.
And I've heard that Doctors Without Borders doesn't just administer medical help. You also have to hand out supplies like fishing nets and plastic sheeting for tents. Sometimes even build roads to get to remote areas.
We don't do that. But we sometimes we wish we could, especially in the Congo, where the road infrastructure is extremely deficient, and you know, you get bogged down in mud and very easily in lots of these places, and there are very few roads. No, we don't do all of that.